This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Save 10% on your entire order by using the coupon code AC10 at checkout.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 213 for Friday, November 28th, 2014. So Thanksgiving week. I'm Phil Nickinson. If this is your first show, we're going to do things a little differently this week because it is a holiday week. And frankly, if anyone's actually out there listening, it will be a great surprise to me. So what we're going to do is just me and Renee Ritchie, iMore, editor on editor, mano y mano, turkey on turkey. Renee, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Phil, although I'm a little bit upset because when we have Thanksgiving in Canada, you guys get Columbus Day. When you have Thanksgiving, we get nothing.
I'm okay with that. So once a year or so, you and I kind of get together and just rap about stuff, and I think that's what we're going to do here. I don't have a script worked out. I don't even know what we want to talk about, but figure iOS and Android are in very good spots right now, and iOS obviously has been in a good spot for a long time.
Can I get something off my chest, Phil?
Yeah.
I want the EU to just leave Google the hell alone. I mean, I'm tired of what they did to Microsoft. I think it never ends up working out well for anybody, and I can't believe we're going to go through this again.
It's almost like, well, back up and explain what you're talking about here.
So the EU, I believe it's the representative from Germany wants to break Google up. They believe that Google is a monopoly and that they're abusing that monopoly by doing priority placements for their own services. And so they would like to break it up into a search entity and then, I guess, a commercial services entity, which would do everything else.
I mean, I get the argument, but yeah, I don't think it's a monopoly yet. And I think, you know, Bing and Yahoo are kind of, just because one company is doing better than the others doesn't mean it's a monopoly.
Well, you can be a monopoly. You just can't like abuse it the way, you know, Intel would offer you preferential pricing if you use their chips. You know, I mean, like, you can't do bad things. And Google, they're doing competitive things, certainly. But I don't even know how you would think about breaking up Google. It doesn't like, there's no clear businesses to me. It's all sort of one entity.
And it's a very different time and a very different space than it was back when Microsoft went through this, right?
And arguably, it gutted Microsoft. I don't think Microsoft ever fully recovered. I think one of the reasons Microsoft still struggles in many spaces today is because of the gutting that they got, you know, both the Justice Department and the EU. But the EU, you remember the browser ballot, Phil, and they demanded that, like, Fefnir, a browser in Scandinavia, get placement alongside Internet Explorer?
It was horrible. It was not good, and I agree. You know, we were talking earlier this morning about whether Microsoft is ever going to come back, and I still think they have potential to. Maybe we should have gotten Dan on here. So he's in Peru or something this week.
Yeah, he doesn't need us.
I don't know what's going on with him. I'm going to sit down here. Oh!
I'm assuming he's playing soccer.
True. So what do we want to talk about? Let's start with, I think, just the state of the phone business, because that's kind of why we're all here, right? I mean, the iPhone got bigger this year and in a lot of ways caught up to where Android has been with these giant devices. And then Google goes one further and has this Nexus 6, which is, you know, almost kind of the same size, but a little bit bigger and I think tougher to hold than the iPhone 6. I mean, how are you dealing with these monstrous devices now?
So I went with the iPhone 6 Plus. Apple very kindly got me an iPhone 6 review unit so I could try both, but I personally, with my own money, bought an iPhone 6 Plus. And the idea for me was that I've been using small phones for a long time, 3.5 or 4 inches, and I wanted to try something different. And I liked it primarily because it really is a big phone, but also a small iPad. You turn it to landscape view, and it's got the split view controller, so you have the list on the side, the content on the other side, like a small iPad. And I use an iPad mini a lot, so it effectively replaced the iPad mini for me, which weirdly made me start using the bigger iPad. That's a separate discussion. And at the same time, the battery, Phil, I understand what you talked about with the Razer Max. I go to sleep at night, I forget to charge my phone, I wake up, it's still at 70%.
Yeah, and suddenly it's not a big deal. And actually, we've gone one step further now that Qualcomm has gotten its quick charge stuff figured out, and you can charge these devices so much faster than you could before. So it's, and even for the devices that I have that have smaller batteries, like the Moto X, you know, and I forget what the number is, but it's not as big as the Nexus 6, it's not as big as the Joy Turbo, but even with the smaller capacity, I can charge it, you know, so much more quickly.
Yeah, and this is a phone that, by weight, is smaller than the iPhone 4S. I mean, it weighs less than an iPhone 4S. So not the iPhone 6, but the iPhone 6 weighs less than the iPhone 4S.
I'm still trying to wrap my brain around a little bit the difference between a large phone and a small tablet, because I use the Nexus 7, which I think I have in here, for, you know, most of the past, almost a year and a half now. So I have the Nexus 7 here, you know, 7-inch tablet, and then I have a 6-inch phone next to it. I mean, one is still a tablet and one is still a phone, and I'm not, you know, my brain doesn't look at this and say, okay, it's just a smaller tablet. Like, to me, they're still two very different devices.
Two, Phil.
Yeah.
And my phone is now, you know, not that much smaller than those tablets.
And some of that is just the way the iPhone 6 Plus is put together with those bezels. But do you really look at that like it's a small tablet? I just don't get that feeling with the Nexus 6, because the way Android tablets and the way Android phones work is still pretty different.
So, I mean, Apple, it was always clear based on two things. And just to rewind a little bit, when Apple was first going to do the tablet, Steve Jobs was like, you know, just scale the interface. You know, exactly what they later made fun of Android for doing. And then the engineers at Apple were like, no, that doesn't work. That looks like big phone apps. We don't want that. So what we're going to do is, they had these hierarchies before. So you'd have like the list of items. You'd tap on the list, the whole screen would replace and show you that item. So if I tap on Phil's contact, the whole screen would replace itself, and the entire screen would then be Phil's contact. What they did with the iPad is, it was 4x3, not, you know, 2x3 or 16x9, but 4x3, and you have the list of all your contacts on one side and the details for the individual contacts on the other. So instead of one column, you got two column views. The phone was always a one column view, but now with the iPhone 6 Plus, when you go landscape, you get the two column view of the iPad, and it seems silly, but it does save you a bunch of back and forthing with the controls.
Yeah, and that's something we're still kind of struggling with a little bit in the Android tablet space. And there have been a lot of stories I've seen just this past week about all this wasted space. I mean, nothing's really changed. I think the design has gotten better over the years, but I agree, there's not this dedicated sort of tablet experience. It's just, it's wasted space.
Well, we're still suffering too, because a lot of developers have to enable this stuff, and a lot of developers haven't updated for the split view controller yet. But also, like an app like Paper by 53, I think it's 53 or 56, mm-hmm. I forget my numbers. Fantastic tablet app, not available on the iPhone, because you have to make it available for all phones. Apple doesn't let you discriminate, and they don't want it on small devices, and they can't do it just on the big devices. And there's all these terrific iPad apps that I would really like to have on my iPhone 6 Plus, I just can't get yet.
And we're still struggling in the apps department on that as well, and so is AC. You know, we still haven't gotten a proper tablet design for our app, and that's
either.
That's on us for not having done it. But it's not just us, right? And there's some really high profile developers who haven't done it.
It's it was funny to me is that indie developers update, so like Pocket Cast, great app on iOS, great app on Android, new version comes out, they jump on it. You have these giant corporations like Facebook and Twitter, you know, just take forever to roll out their updates.
Still there?
Yep, I lost you for a second.
I think Google's having some serious hiccups that, not unusual this time of year, actually, when you get into weird Nexus time and new services and all that stuff. So I'm sure whatever you said was very important, though, and good.
Yeah, no. Well, it, speaking of which, we had fun chatting with the Android, Material Design folks on Iterate last week.
Yeah, how did that go? I still need to listen to that, actually.
They are, well, you know, they're one was a designer on the Android team, one was a designer on the Chrome and Android team, because, you know, material design goes everywhere now. And it was just fascinating to hear how they developed it, what their expectations were, how much the operating system should handle, how much the developers should handle, you know, how you, there's a lot of design questions, like, you know, do you service your brand? Do you service Google's new look? You know, how happy will OEMs be when Google's trying to put their look, you know, in prominence? It's a really super, super smart guys, and a lot of really good design choices there.
Do you agree that the idea that Google is getting better at design than Apple is getting better at services? I mean, and it's easy to say, but I don't think it's incorrect at this point.
No, it's like they both started, like Apple made sure that the iPhone shipped with 60 frames per second, but they didn't have a lot of functionality. Google shipped a ton of functionality, but they didn't have a smooth interface, and it's really hard to go back and architect those things in, but Apple did it with extensibility in iOS 8, and Google's done it with material design in Lollipop, and it's for all of our benefit.
Well, and you and I have talked before that it's very much them coming to the same point, just from completely different directions.
Yeah, and it's great for us, because we used to joke that Mateus Duarte was the best designer whose work very few people ever got to see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I did ask the hard question, Phil. I asked what was up with the shirts, and they maintained that it was his ability to traverse dimensions.
Do the shirts actually exist?
Yeah, well, apparently they're five-dimensional, so we're not...
So phones, tablets, I mean, you've used, you know, iOS 8 forever now. I've toyed with it a little bit. Have you used Lollipop yet?
I have. I've used it very intermittently, though, because I put it on my Nexus 5 and then promptly lost my Nexus 5.
So what's your quick take on what you've seen?
I like it a lot. I'm a big fan of you. Like I've said this before, I like proprietary interface. I believe all of our pipes should be open and all of our interfaces should be proprietary because one visionary makes really nice interfaces. Mm-hmm. And I think Lollipop really shows, you know, I have a little bit of love in my heart from WebOS still. And I think Duarte's brought some of the best ideas from WebOS to Android in a totally new way, but it's still those same core competencies. And it makes for a much better experience. If I can pick up a device and know how it works, as a user, it just totally de-stresses the environment for me.
It's, I'm not 100% crazy about it. There's some basic functionalities like muting your phone, which is now more difficult. And I think they tried to change with an engineering solution instead of how do people use their phones?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that changes and how it doesn't. And what we still haven't seen is how all the manufacturers are really going to get in there and change things. Because right now we have the Nexus phones have all been updated and we have Motorola stuff. And that's about it so far. LG is starting to roll out now. But from what we've seen in some leaked builds, they didn't change too much over their previous implementation. So we'll see. I'm not quite ready to make that call yet, but there are little things that have taken some getting used to, especially from the functionality side. Just give me a mute button. That's all I want. Just
well, you know the old saying, Phil, that there's no plan that survives contact with people.
Yeah. You know, it would not surprise me to see things change.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing about this, and we have the same thing with iOS 7, the same thing with, because that was the big redesign, is by iOS 7.1, they gave us the ability to turn off the motion stuff because it was literally giving people vertigo.
Yep.
And you can have these great ideas, but when you have, you know, 10 million people hitting your software, you're going to learn really fast what needs to change.
And the same thing goes with the animations in Lollipop. I think they're very pretty, but almost too deliberate in their speed. You know, some people are just, you can call them slow. It's a slow, you know, it's a high frame rate, slow animation. It looks great, but you're just waiting longer than it feels like you used to. I haven't timed it. I'm not sure if I'm actually waiting longer for things to happen or if there's a reason for that. If there's stuff going on in the background that needs to happen while those animations are firing.
We did ask about that because people have the same complaint with iOS 7, and the old joke in animation is the animator always wants it to be twice as long than it has to be because they're looking at their animations.
Yep.
And yeah, it's the same thing, is they're going to keep fine tuning that stuff. But my guess is by the next revisions, it's going to get half, you know, twice as fast.
And that's why I haven't freaked out about it yet, because that's the sort of thing they can and will tweak and change, and it'll get better.
Yeah.
Hey folks, Phil here. Now, Renee and I are going to get back into the iOS versus Android stuff in a second, I promise. But it's also a perfect time to talk about Raise Labs. Now, Raise Labs helps companies develop exceptional products for mobile devices, both on Android and iOS. Has offices in Boston and San Francisco, two of my favorite cities, and has been making great products for more than 11 years. And they're not just another developer shop. Raise Labs is selective about the projects they accept, and that makes sure that the work is meaningful and exciting, and that shows in the end product. Looking to design for Android L? Well, Raise Labs, which, by the way, made the Inc. 5000 list of the fastest-growing companies in America, does it. And they're hiring engineers on both coasts, looking for developers who care about making great products and sharing them with the world. If you're a developer looking for a job, visit Raise Labs, that's RAIZLABS.com/company/jobs, to learn more about open opportunities. Let's talk watches for a little bit, because that's kind of the next big thing on your horizon, right? And we're in the middle of it, for better or worse. I think we have 6 Android Wear watches right now. Actually, I've got all 6 of them here.
Well, you must be on your 6th generation Samsung watch.
And Samsung itself has done 6 watches. We've got the LG G Watch, the G Watch R, the Moto 360, the Sony Smartwatch 3, the Asus Zen Watch, and I'm totally forgetting one. What is it? I did this the other day, too. I said that to you. I don't remember. There's one more I'm forgetting. We have a lot of watches. That's the point. So, actually, this week I'm wearing the Asus Zen Watch, which actually comes with a leather strap, but I put a metal one on because that's how I roll. I like it a lot. There's a lot going on. I mean, we've long talked about the Moto 360, which I still think is right up there with one of the best. You're going to be waiting on the Apple Watch, and you're allowed to throw something at me virtually every time I say iWatch.
I say it too.
But you're going to be waiting on it for probably another good 3, 4, 5 months, right?
Until, yeah, March or April. It's interesting because Apple does that. They pre-announce things. The Apple TV was announced, the year before it was actually debuted in 2007, and the iPhone and iPad were both announced, 6 and 3 months ahead of time, for different reasons. Because you see this all the time, right? The FCC leaks things, other government agencies leak things, and also with the watch, the development kit is coming out. It's the first time I think Apple. Well, the iPad launched with apps. The Apple Watch is going to launch with apps, so developers need time to actually make that stuff.
But even then, it's going to be really simple, right? Like they are an extension of the apps that are on the phone. You have to have the phone connected, or basically nothing works.
Yeah, so native apps are coming next year, and the watch is coming next year. So it's weird that they're not able to build them now. But it's probably, people don't understand this when we talk about it. But even Google and even Apple are constrained; they can't do everything at once, and they're busy trying to ship the watch, so they can't make native apps available yet. But they're doing what's called WatchKit apps, so you can have notifications that can be short or long, and that depends on privacy and available power. You can have glances, which are like widgets, and you can have WatchKit apps where the interface lives on the watch, but the logic, the computing, happens on the phone. And what's really weird there, Phil, is that they're gambling that Bluetooth low energy constant transmission is going to be more power effective than burning CPU cycles on the watch, which is an interesting gamble to make.
Seriously, though, the I don't even know how to describe it. The launcher, the home screen.
Yes.
What the hell? What? What is that?
So it's like little bubbles. It's almost like it's if you take the iPhone home screen and you just pack them closely together and make them round, and then you can use the digital crown to zoom in and out. I haven't tried it yet. I got to wear the demo watch, which ran a CAN demo, so it just moved through things the way a phone does in a carrier store that's running a demo loop. But I got to see the marketing person wearing the watch and interacting with it. And you can still tap them and things like that, but I guess it's their attempt to get a ton of icons into a very small space.
I say that, and Android Wear still doesn't have an easy way to launch apps. And voice still isn't quite there. It works, but it's just not fast enough for me. I find myself saying something to the watch and then sitting there waiting for it.
It's probably not on device yet for a watch, I'm guessing.
A lot of it is for us. Oh, the voice, you mean? Yeah. I'm sure it's kicking that back and forth. But it's one of those things, you just don't get a sense of that in all the marketing materials and the commercials and stuff like that. So I can see that being a letdown. Are people going to be able to stay excited for another 5 months for the Apple Watch? A long time.
Yeah, I always say that, like when they introduced the iPhone and it was 6 months until it came out, the big advantage they had with the iPhone is that people hadn't seen an interface like that. Like people say the iPhone was revolutionary, but really we just saw cool things moving on a screen and we wanted them. And the iPad, it didn't really have a story yet. People just saw a big iPhone and some people got it, but it really took until the iPad 2 before people started buying them in volume. And the watch is weird because they're not selling it like a normal thing. You'd be able to get an aluminum version for $350, but a stainless steel and a gold, like the Kevin Michaluk gold or rose gold version for thousands of dollars, which is not what a normal smartwatch expectation is.
And there are two sizes, which is a little interesting.
Yeah, 38 millimeter and 42 millimeter, which doesn't sound like a 4 millimeter does not sound like a big difference, but when you look at them, it's a big physical difference.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I've wanted like a smaller version of any of the watches I have now, but if I want something different, I just get something different.
Yeah, people think it's it's not as complicated as it sounds, because it's sort of like you get the 4-inch or the 5-inch Nexus, and then you decide whether you want the white or the black version, and then you decide what case you want to buy on it, and that's the strap. But we could conceivably have gold straps that are hundreds if not thousands of dollars too. So it's a really different environment.
Yeah, I have, and I know I took a little heat from your pal Gruber over the additional expense of buying a different strap, and I see the point on that now. I mean, this is a $20, bracelet that you get with the Pebble Steel that happens to work on the Moto 360 versus a $70 bracelet that I put on the Zen watch. And it's definite difference. I get that now. But it's still, like, for as much fun as I'm having with these watches, anytime somebody asks me, like, do I need this? The answer is inevitably no. If you have the money to burn and you think it's really cool, absolutely do it. But it's just not a you have to have this because it makes your life better thing yet.
We had not on this week's debug, but on the next one, we had John Edwards join Gruber and me and Guy English on it. And he actually he's a developer, but he's also a watchmaker, which is rare these days. There's not a lot of them left, but he makes parts for Rolexes and Omegas and Panerais and all those things to just try to get like a watch, like a real hardcore watch person's take on all this. And it's still not like, you know, a Rolex is an heirloom. Philips Patek is an heirloom. These watches, even if they're gold, the logic board in them, the circuitry in them, the operating system in them, these are not timeless things. So it's an incredible tension between that. But the only thing that I can go back to, Phil, for every watch, whether it's Android Wear or Pebble or the Apple Watch, is they have to still make that case. You know, like the tablets tried to make it. You need something between your phone and your computer. And the watch's only thing that I can think of is convenience. Like, there are certain things that are so trivial you shouldn't have to reach into your pocket to get notified, to log your steps, to authenticate something, or to control, like to remote control something in your house. These are such small interactions that it's a waste of your time to get them. And if the watch can do that super, super well, then it might be worthwhile me saving the time and effort of going to my phone.
I still very much feel like this is just a display on my wrist. Now, you've got a couple that really changed that in a good way, I think, with the Moto 360 and the Zen watch. I've got one from Sony that's nice to run with because it's got GPS built in. And it's not quite 100% standalone like, say, the Samsung Gear S is, but it's Android Wear versus Tizen, and it works on every phone and not just Samsung. So there's an interesting, I mean, I don't think there has to be one watch to rule them all, but it's just been interesting to see these little pockets of how everybody's been approaching it.
Yeah, and Apple keeps using the word intimate over and over again, and they even have that new form of communication where you can sketch a quick picture or even send your heartbeat or something. And I don't know if that'll appeal to the sort of the Snapchat generation where they really want super intimate, super personal communications. Because we've talked about this before, Phil. Like, I don't get modern messaging. I don't use stickers in Line or Facebook. And you know, even Kevin is a much bigger WhatsApp user than I am. So I'm prepared to say that I just don't get all these news, like Yik Yak. I don't get all these new things. But maybe there is sort of a niche for super personal communication that you want even closer to you than your phone. I don't know.
Every 8-year-old I know loves these watches, but they're 8 years old and don't have $200 and $300 to spend on them. And I certainly wouldn't give it to them yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just too old.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Would you give your daughters a smartwatch before you gave them a smartphone?
I mean, you can at this point because you got to have one to have the other.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. I'm just getting into that. That's actually one of the things I'm very jealous about is how iOS, what are we up to?
iOS 8.
7? 8? Has approached kids and those kind of secondary accounts that, you know, my kid can have her own iPhone and, you know, ask mom, hey, can I buy this app? I want to buy this app. And mom gets the notification that says that. I can't quite do that yet.
It's still painful. And I like it. It's first generation. It's still painful. So, for example, you get notified for free apps, which drives some parents
right
out of their minds. I don't think both Android and iOS are allowed to call them free apps anymore, thanks to the EU either.
Yeah. I mean, here in the States, it's still free, whatever. But, yeah, you know, it's just another one of those things. And we could do a whole series of podcasts about bringing your kids up in this space, and we probably should, because I'm very much going through that right now. But it's been interesting to see how each one has approached it, and I think it's still way early in that, and they're going to get better at it.
Well, I mean, one of the things about the EU is that they're regulating, like, both Android Play and the App Store have to say within app purchases. They can't say free anymore if they have subscriptions and app purchases. So Apple's using Get. I think Google doesn't have the prices up front anyway, so it's not as big a deal for them. But for me, it's still confusing. It's like, Get versus free still doesn't tell me what the total cost of that app is going to be. And if I really want a free app, there's nothing that tells me this app is free versus this app is free. Like, it's still very hard as a normal person for me to navigate these stores.
It's going to get better. Curation is just a mess. I agree. I think they both have to do better about it. And it's funny that we both come to that same conclusion, even though, again, the two companies are coming at them from very different directions. Apple approves everything. I mean, and it's not just Apple, actually. Samsung will actually, for its own app store, it actually opens up the apps and uses them. I've gotten feedback from that process that includes pictures and video of somebody using the app, which is a crazy thing. Amazon does that as well. With Android, it's just you slap it up there. But it's interesting how we both come to that conclusion that, you know what, curation kind of sucks on both sides.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's that old editorial control thing, right? It was that old CompuServe versus AOL, when if you take responsibility for it, you got to take responsibility for it. And the problem we still have with iOS is that it's split amongst different organizations. Like Eddie Q's team runs the actual store, and they're in charge of editorial and management. But Phil Schiller's team runs developer relations and app review. And Craig Federighi's team does the APIs and the frameworks. And a couple apps got approved that then later got unapproved and then got approved again, because different people had different opinions as to whether or not they should be there. And that's hard for developers, users, and Apple to live with.
And I still think there are arguments for both. I mean, Jerry and I go back and forth all the time. He thinks it should be the Wild Wild West and completely open. I would be okay with some sort of pre-approved, you know, very basic, let's just keep the worst of the worst out. But then you get into what is the worst of the worst, who decides that. I get that. I'd like to see some sort of...
I like OS X's. Like if OS X, if you want, you can restrict it to just using the App Store. Otherwise, you can have Gatekeeper, which means the developers have to have a signed certificate, mm-hmm. or you can turn that off and have anything or everything. And you have those three levels, and you can choose which one you want.
What else is going on in our little world we need to worry about? Music has gotten a lot better for Android, I think. You know, we've got all the major services up. Google Play Music is still really good, except we've got this really weird... thing. You can only have 10 devices, five of which can be phones, on your account, but then you can only deactivate 4 a year, which is mostly a problem for people with our jobs. We tend to go through a lot of devices here, but I'm just not crazy about it on principle.
It's the same thing with iTunes. You can have 5 machines authorized for iTunes, but you can also have 10 devices authorized for iTunes in the cloud, which is the re-downloading and auto-downloading stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if you have not authorized all of them, you can deauthorize some, but if they're all authorized, you have to deauthorize all of them, but you can only do that once a year. And
it's quit treating us like criminals.
Well, that's the thing. And we got Google Play Music in Canada finally. It's one of the, we don't have a lot of music services. We still don't have Amazon MP3 here, even though they promised it to us in 2008. So it's nice that we have these alternatives. But I had this discussion the other day, is we're still, as much as we're getting past device lock-in, especially with music, because MP3s are DRM-free now, mm-hmm. for so much stuff, there's still horizontal lock-ins. I can't just buy a movie on Amazon and then throw it up on to Google or throw it up on to Apple. I can do that with music. I can buy my music anywhere and put it up on Google's locker or Amazon's locker, Apple's locker. But everything else is still locked to a specific vendor service.
I've got the Nexus Player behind me, which is one of the first Apple TV, one of the first Android TV devices. Where we stand on Apple TV? Because not a lot has changed there in the past year or two, right?
As far as my understanding is, it was going to be a small project, and a lot of people who kind of needed a break from working on iOS went there just to get, you know, sort of like a sabbatical at the same company. And then they got really serious about it. I'm not sure what changed, but the project got bigger and bigger, so it was pushed back till spring of this year, then fall of this year, now spring of next year. And I don't know what it'll be, but it's a much more important thing to Apple than it was previously.
And in the car is a huge deal. I've spoken openly about how important I think it is that Google and Apple are really getting into this. What's kind of the launch date we're looking at for, I don't want to call it iOS in the car, I just totally forgot the name
CarPlay.
Of it. CarPlay, thank you. And Android Auto. Android Auto we're slowly starting to get into. I think the first cars are going to be coming out this spring. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people on board. We just haven't seen a whole lot out of it yet, and they just released the SDK like last week or the week before. Even then, I mean, I think it's super important because we've got to get people to put their phones down in the car. Have to do it. Is this gonna make it happen, or is it just gonna create more confusion for users?
Yeah, it's funny because, and you probably remember this too, back when we only had radios in the car, I remember driving with so many people whose heads were down the entire time changing channels to find the song they liked. You know, so humans will find distractions, but if we can use this stuff not only to be better than what we had before. The thing that's exciting me most about like Android Wear, Android in the car, CarPlay, the Apple Watch, is we're getting into this era, I'm going to steal Jesse Char's term, projectables, where we're taking what we understand, our experience, and it's not like I have an iPhone in my pocket and then a completely disintegrated system in the car, like running QNX or something and only Bluetooth in between, but I can take my apps, my content, my stuff, the interface that I know how to use and project that into my car, and I don't have to buy a new car to update that. I buy my new phone or I download my new operating system and my car gets better. And like I bought the year Toyota before Toyota got in-car dashes, and I can't put one in. I've talked to them. They said you have to buy the next year's car. Yep. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's really, I'd be curious to see how many people are actually holding off on getting cars right now waiting for that stuff. Probably not a lot. But that's the sort of thing I'm thinking about. You know, I would like a new car eventually. My car is almost 10 years old, and damn it, it's a Honda. It's going to be around for 10 more years. But what I buy next might very well have to do with whether I can get Android Auto in it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's incumbent on the Apples and the Go. I was giving Samsung crap on Twitter and with, you know, a mutual friend who works at Samsung, because we finally got my mom off a CRT television. Mm-hmm. And Videotron, our cable provider, their cable box is made by Samsung. And we bought her a Samsung TV, and they do not play nicely together. And that's the kind of stuff I really want. Like, there's a 20-second delay, so no matter what we do, you can't have the voice coming out at the same time as the lips are moving on the TV, which is maddening. And that's the kind of thing, you know, and it happens with Apple stuff too. Like, Microsoft stuff, there's just annoying places that they don't work together, and they're the same company. And I think that's what we got to start demanding as consumers. If I'm going all in with you, if I'm giving you all the monies, make sure it works really, really well together.
Well, I mean, you know it would solve that.
What's that?
A proper Apple TV.
She has an Apple TV. That works. Ironically, the Samsung phone, Apple TV and the Samsung television work great together.
Make it happen, Renee. Yeah. I want a big Apple TV with a big Apple. It's not going
to
happen.
Oh, and actually, no. There's no reason. They're probably going to make a 5K panel to go with the Mac Pro when Thunderbolt 3 is released, and you can use that as a television if you want. But it's going to be made to the specifications of a high end display, like the new Dell 5K one with ridiculous color gamut and stuff like that. I mean, I have the 5K iMac here, Phil, and it's ridiculous. It's like looking into a better world.
That's what everybody says, but you have to remember, my eyes are really bad.
I'm a designer by trade, so like, you give me pixels and I will never say no to you.
Fair enough. Well, anything else you want to roll into this little holiday podcast here? Anything we haven't talked about that you want to talk about?
One thing I'm really, really happy about is how it seems like displays are getting a lot of attention again, and whether it's the Note 4 or the iPhone 6 Plus, we're starting, OLED is super, super good. LED is getting super good. They're putting great anti-glare, anti-reflective coatings on it. They're putting better polarizers on it. They're using dual domain pixels. And it may not mean a lot to people who think, you know, it's just a bunch of gobbledygook, but as phones get bigger, more people are going to be looking at them. Like, you're going to hold it and your daughter's going to look at it, and now they get, not only they can see it from the side, but it looks right when they're looking at it. And all those little things like that, I'm great that that's becoming a competitor. I could really care less about megapixels anymore. Like, good screen quality and good, you know, large amounts of storage and all those things, I'm hoping that's the competitive arena.
You still got us beat on cameras. When I say you, that means you personally, because you apparently are making all the cameras in iOS products, right?
It's the same Sony sensor. Apple's advantage right now is that they design their own chipset, and they can make a really kick-ass image processor. For an experienced photographer, Apple's cameras are only now becoming interesting because they just added manual controls in iOS 8, and, you know, Windows Phone and several Android phones have kicked ass on that for a while. But for a normal person who just wants to press a button and forget about it, the better the chipset, the better the photo. But I think Qualcomm and Samsung and everyone's going to take that, now that it's super competitive in chipsets, they're going to take that really seriously.
I think, yeah, I think 2015 is going to be another turning point for that for Android. I certainly hope it is. And it's gotten better, you know, steadily, but not in leaps and bounds.
Well, like, HTC is experimenting, which I really like. Like, whether you like it or not, the stuff like going to really big photons and going to the two cameras, at least, you know, they're making people rethink what a mobile camera can be.
Yeah, and it, you know, it hasn't always worked, and it's a big ship to steer. So if one phone, you know, this 4-megapixel resolution on ultrapixels hasn't really done it for us, even though it's really good in low light, you know, that doesn't mean they can't adjust. And they're all doing it, right? We've seen Motorola, get it better. We've seen Nexus phones get a lot better, and Samsung is probably right up there among the best. Samsung, Sony, and LG, I think, still have the best cameras. As far as Android goes, not as good as the iPhone 6, definitely not.
Marketing, that I think they have to fix it, because like, even the iPhone 6 Plus, it says that it has optical image stabilization, and it absolutely does, but people think that by virtue of that, it's going to be a tremendously better picture. If you zoom in, you will see that the noise in the photo is slightly better, but for most people, it's going to be really hard to tell the difference on stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, and what I always tell people, because especially as we're doing all these Nexus reviews, I would see commenters say, well, I read that this camera is better. Look at the sample pictures. That's, you know, the best thing anyone can do.
and you want it to look better, because like, the Note 4 has those different screen modes, and if all you're going to do is look at pictures on your phone, it's different than if you want to print out 8x10s for the grandparents. You know, it's like totally different requirements for different people.
Yeah, generally the Moto X is just about all I need. If all I'm going to do is share them and look at them on my phone, if I'm going to look at it on a computer, it's a different story, and especially if I'm going to print it out. So it really depends on your application.
Yeah, and your skill as a photographer, because, you know, there's no technology can fix the eye. I look at something like a Miriam Jouar shoots or a Liana Lofty shoots, or, you know, even like Dan shoots, and the eye is just so much a part of that.
The lighting and the composition makes a huge, huge difference.
Yep.
Well, Renee, thank you. That was a fun little holiday podcast. If you want to follow Renee, where can we do so?
You can find me at Renee Ritchie on Twitter, plus Renee Ritchie on Google+, and you can find me at iMore and at Mobile Nations with Phil.
Are you actually using Google+?
I use it for certain things. I got into discussion with somebody because I find this interesting. I don't upload my photos to Google Plus or Facebook because I don't want my backups on social networks, but I upload them to Google Drive because to me that's a different thing.
It's very weird, yes. I'm the same way. I've got them all like in Dropbox and I think it all goes to Google as well, but doesn't necessarily get posted. It's a mess. I'll have to figure that out over Christmas. All right, everybody listening to this slightly impromptu podcast, thank you. We're going to go eat some turkey now. We'll be back next week at our regular time, probably. Maybe.
Have a good Thanksgiving, Phil.
See ya.